Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We are counting down to the end of the year. This might be the last episode. We might have one more. We still don't know yet because we are unorganized. Aki's here, Bree's here, Jacob's here, and we have a Lloyd Berry joining us. How's everybody doing?
I'm alive.
Decent. I'm here.
You are here.
I can save the rest of my horror story for later.
Yeah, the horror story will come later, but you know, yeah. Shit happens.
It's been a day. Yeah,
it has been a day, and it's going to get better because we are ending the year with an awesome interview. A couple of weeks ago, I got an email about a new update hitting a game that we talked about previously on the show. I don't know if we just talked about it or if we covered it, but Super Animal Royale, which is a little top-down battle royale with cutesy animals. We got an email about an update, and at first I wasn't too like sure if we should look into it because we were so busy at the end of the year and things get kind of crazy. But then I saw the trailer and I immediately fell in love with what I saw. I was lucky enough to be invited to a little preview event, and I enjoyed it so much that I immediately reached out to the PR team and I'm like, I want to interview these people because this update's fucking awesome. And they were like, sure. And now we have Michael and Ruben here from Pixile Games. How are you two doing?
Hello.
Doing well. Doing great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for having us.
The longest intro I've ever given. How are you guys doing today? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, Ruben was responsible for that trailer, so you've got one of the right people to talk that about.
Very good. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just say we're doing good. We're tired after a long process getting this out, but end of the year. But yeah, feeling good about it being out now.
In the home stretch, you guys gonna take a vacation with the holidays?
Yeah, trying to take some time to recover. It's been a long development process on this expansion.
Yeah, same.
Well, for the people who don't know what Super Animal Royale is and what Super Animal World is, give us the sales pitch. What is going on in this game, and what is this update that I am so excited about?
Sure. So yeah, Super Animal Royale, we actually just hit our 7th anniversary. We released an early access in 2018 and then did our version 1 in 2021 on all the consoles. And it's basically, like you said, a top-down shooter with cute animals fighting to the death. So we have a lot of fun of that twist of the cute and cozy, but they're actually fighting each other to the death. And the matches are pretty quick. You can win in like 7 minutes, so it's a little faster paced than some of the other battle royales, but kind of has all the same trappings of the genre done in a more accessible, quick way and a pretty unique theme. So that's where the game started. But when we first released it, we saw the community that first kind of formed around it. When they came in, they saw all these cute animals and they were expecting something, I guess, a little cozier. And a lot of people hadn't played a battle royale before. So when we kind of noticed that unique character of the community, we immediately started thinking like, well, what if we actually did add some of that like cozy element? Because in the pregame lobbies, people would come in and just be like so friendly and emoting and having a good time socializing, but they only had 2 minutes before each match. So we thought, well, what if we just give them just as much time as they like to hang out and play together? And that was kind of the origin of the idea, but it took us a long time before we were able to actually build it. So Super Animal World basically turns that pregame lobby into a whole social hub where you can go fishing, catch bugs, race hamster balls, and it's like a cozy social space in between fights to the death.
Where did the idea come from to turn a Royale game into a social life sim?
I mean, I think it was what Michael just said, which is that the community itself was being so creative and so social in how they would occupy themselves in those like 2 minute downtimes between matches, which is, you know, not that much time to form connections and stuff. And of course, a lot of it then carried over to Discord and other places where they formed more lasting community. But, it was very clear that if they had the chance, sometimes they would just want to hang out in there. We have a lot of great customization options with over 500 animal breeds, you know, different ways people can express themselves with their animals. And I don't know how many cosmetics Michael maybe knows, but a lot.
Over 2000, I think now.
Yeah, over 2000 cosmetic. Yeah. So, I mean, so there's this whole like expressive element of the game that was always there. And it's just a little hard to appreciate when somebody's shooting at you fully. You know what I mean? And that also goes for, so Michael brought me in early on to do the story, the lore, and then the video content that we make. And we didn't have that many buttons to push in that direction other than how the environments were built, right? Like putting little clues as to why the world is the way it is and all that stuff into the map itself. We did some video content on YouTube. We have a series called Super Animal Royale Tonight that was a little more like a linear storytelling format for fleshing out the world building and the lore of the game. But again, a lot of those details were lost on people because they're trying not to get killed, right? And yeah. So, both from a social and like creative play standpoint and self-expression, and from a storytelling and world building standpoint, Super Animal World just gives us so many more tools that we can employ for players to engage more deeply in things that they were already interested in, and now we're just giving it to them like at scale in a way that we weren't able to do before. But a lot of the seeds were planted for the storytelling, you know, throughout these years.
On a technical scale, how did you convert a battle royale game into the life sim? And what kind of concurrent player count do your servers allow in a world instance?
Yeah, that was complicated. The good thing is that a battle royale already requires a pretty high player count, so we had a lot of that infrastructure in place. But the interesting technical challenge for Super Animal World was we now have social hub servers and the battle royale servers and the other game modes, and we have to take people from one type of server and move them into another one and then back, because the other big thing that the expansion does is just basically gets rid of the main menu. Once you're in the world, you're either in the social hub running around, or you're fighting to the death, and then it just like puts you right back into the social world again. And so that was actually the technical complexity was trying to keep groups of friends together who are playing, like if you're playing on a squad of four, matchmake them into a different server and then make sure they get back to the social hub again. But the social hubs currently support the same amount of players as the battle royale. So both of them are 64. Although we're able to tweak those numbers on the server side. So we have been playing around with that a little bit at launch just to make sure everything's working. So we were capping the numbers a little bit lower on the social hub, just like around 50 to 55, to leave some extra space for friends to join in later so that you wouldn't get into a full server. But yeah, my co-founder, Chris, kind of had to do a lot of magic to make all that work.
Yeah, it's very seamless the way it works for the most part, but yeah, that is where a lot of the work that to make it look effortless went into that transition between the battle royale servers and the social hubs.
Yeah, we also wanted to theme it all, because the idea is that all these animals that you're playing as are clones. So each time you die in the battle royale, a new clone has to be popped out of the tank, and then you get shot in a cannon back into the world. So the whole cycle's themed, and if you actually survive, then you your animal hasn't died in the game, and so you get taken back to the island on a ferry, and you get to go to a whole new island that we built for Victor's.
That yeah, we like awesome. Making explicit what's implicit in all these battle royales, which is that you're dying a lot. And we make it explicit with this, like, you know, room full of clones that we show you in between your matches.
One day I'll get to check out Victory Island. Not yet. One day.
Yeah.
This is
you sure? Just... You sure about that?
No, I'm not. I am not at all. This isn't just a social sim. It's kind of like a full-fledged RPG in some ways. There's 350 quests that you can do. Like, where the hell did this come from?
We like scope creep.
Yeah, there's a reason it took a little longer than we initially thought it would to get this update out. That is one of them. I mean, I think the server dance you're talking about earlier is one of them. But yes. Okay. I mean, we knew we wanted to put NPCs in the world. We knew we wanted the world to be full and lively, like even if you're in there by yourself, and then get even more lively as more and more players come. And then the map, which is the same map we use for the Battle Royale, is quite big, actually. And so once you start adding NPCs in one area, you go, well, now this area feels a little empty. And, you know, before you know it, we have over 200 NPCs in the world, you know, each of which has their own little mini story. And the other thing, one of the other goals of Super Animal World for us was to do a little better job teaching the game, like all the various mechanics. And so the quest system is part of that, in addition to just wanting to flesh out the storytelling that's kind of been in the background the whole time, bring it to the foreground. So it's doing different things at the same time. It's making the world feel lived in and alive in a place that you want to hang out by having all these different NPCs you can talk to. The quests give you, if you're a new player, they give you a certain, you know, training or different like objectives you can seek to kind of like zero in on one particular part of the play, right? One particular weapon or one particular mechanic. And then if you're, you know, if you already know all this, it's also giving you all this kind of like 360 tour of the world and its inhabitants and its culture and its different factions and all that. It's kind of taking you on a tour both of the game mechanics and of the world building that we, again, have been doing for many years at a more subliminal level that is now front and center.
Very cool. It blows my mind that what started as a battle royale game, you can now, you know, hunt bugs and go fishing and then murder your friend. It's like a literal Animal Crossing.
Yeah, also just lets us, we have a lot of fun with the humor of these cute animals fighting to the death, and now that they get to relax and live in a wonderful cozy world, and then they actually have to go fight to the death again, it just makes it even more entertaining.
Yeah, I love how the trailer goes back and forth with that cute and the fighting animation, like, and the eagle is, that's very funny.
Yeah, that's kind of been a part. I think our first trailer even had that, like the sort of like cute, but with this surprising dark edge has always been like the cornerstone of our humor in the game. And so each time we have a new big beat like this, we have to think of another way to kind of convey that. And the eagle, yeah, is the way we do it in this particular trailer. But yeah, that like we don't want it to be too sweet or too dark, though. Like, it's always a matter of finding that balance because, you know, the characters really are cute, but, you know, we don't want to bore people by being purely saccharine with it. Not that Animal Crossing is boring, but that's not, you know, that's not where we start. We started on the more combat side, right? Now we're like letting more cozy elements, which is kind of a strange direction to do. I don't know, maybe more strange the other way.
It really is a different take on things. Normally you'll see, you know, PvP added to a single player game or something like that. And now this is just adding a whole new genre to one genre. It's like I've been so excited to chat about this update. And I have been spending hours, literal hours now, just doing quests and catching bugs and fishing. I caught a legendary fish today.
Nice.
Which was nice. Friggin' cool.
Very exciting, yeah.
Like, I'm enjoying the hell out of this. It is such a different twist on what people would expect out of a Royale game. And so I'm really enjoying it.
Do you have like a name for this new genre you've kind of put yourself in?
cozy battle royale. We call it the coziest place to kill your friends is what we've been doing.
See? There you go. The I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Cozy royale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think cozy royale works, or cozy combat maybe, because we have other modes, right? We have infection mode, and we have the team mode. So yeah, and you know, we're always experimenting with different combat modes as well. So
actually, speaking of your different modes, you've got like besides the main battle royale, you've got the Saw versus the Rebellion mode, the Walking Dead, mm-hmm. and are private matches new now too? Is that, or have they been around for a while?
We've had private matches for a while. They've still been, they're in sort of a beta where we give them to like tournament organizers and things like that. So we built the tool for that, and we've been thinking about how we could roll it out more widely. So it's not available to everyone to host, but anyone can join. Yeah.
Well, tell me about the Saw versus Rebellion mode and the Walking Dead. That's interesting.
Yeah, so Saw vs. Rebellion is the conflict between the Super Animal World Security Forces and the Rebellion, who you meet in the quest in the world, the two main factions. So you basically have two sides, 24 versus 24, and you get to pick a class at the beginning. So you can be a medic or an assault class, and then you're capturing three different control points. It's a pretty good mode for when you're first learning the game, because you get to keep respawning each time you die, and then you can pick different classes that already have their loadout of weapons. Yeah, and then one of the twists in the middle of the match is that a giant star-nosed mole comes out of the ground, and it's an opportunity to make a comeback if your team is behind, or just kind of clinch the victory if you're already ahead, because whoever kills the mole gets a speed boost for their whole team, so their reinforcements are getting in faster, and then the mole drops a box that, when activated, takes off 10 or 100 points from the enemy team, because basically when you have more flags, you're trying to drain the opponent's points to win the war.
Nice.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. That's the kind of mode I need to get into.
It's honestly more accessible, because you don't just die and you're done. You know, you have more time to learn in there, because you get a go right away.
Like, even in Halo, I was always a fan of big team battle. So just having more people to carry my worthless ass. Always good.
Yeah, you get a support role. I just did the quest where one of the quests where you're supposed to be a medic and do a certain amount of healing, and I was like, oh, this is kind of nice to not feel like I have to go out and shoot someone, to like stand behind the guys who are shooting, and because I'm famously the worst player on the dev team, so I also like Saw vs. Rebellion a lot, because it doesn't feel as stressful as the battle royale, which I have not. I spent a lot of time on Victory Island during development, because I was playing by myself just against bots, because we were on, you know, just developer servers, and I was starting to feel pretty good about myself. And then this week, when everybody came back and I started playing against other people, not so much. I have not been back to Victory Island since the launch of Super Animal World myself. I'd have to find a good squad or something to get there, I think.
So,
you were asking about Walking Dead mode, right, as well?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Walking Dead, yeah.
Michael, you want to explain Walking Dead?
Sure. So it's our zombie chicken infection mode. Basically, at the beginning of the match, four players come down with the Cluckles, which turns them into a zombie chicken. And they're trying to infect all of the survivors before the survivors can extract from the island. So instead of like the battle royale where you all parachute onto the island at the beginning, this one you just wake up on the island and one of your friends in your squad might be infected or not. You don't know at the beginning, but within the first 20 seconds or so, they'll turn into a zombie if they are and try to, the zombie chickens just have like a melee attack, but they're really fast. And so they try to infect everyone. They have a chance every time they hit someone to infect them without killing them. And then that person can end up turning, like once they've been infected, they're going to turn, so they can kind of strategically position themselves within other survivors so that the moment they turn, they can try to infect other people too. Or if you just kill, if you kill a survivor, they're going to come back as a zombie too. So you, the skunk gas circle keeps shrinking like the battle royale. And eventually at the end, there's a safe circle that the survivors have to get into to be extracted.
Cluckle sounds like something I'm going to catch at Magfest next month.
Oh, jeez.
Avoid the Cluckles, yeah.
So you mentioned World has been out for about a week now. What's the reception been?
It's been really cool. Like, we didn't know, like, until we saw it at scale, everyone playing, what the, like, how much time are people going to spend in the cozy social space versus hopping into matches. And it's felt like so far it has a really good balance between just like naturally hopping into some modes and then spending a little bit more time on questing. And I think it did take a lot of people by surprise how much is packed into it and how much is new. Because it was definitely a hard thing with the trailers and talking about it leading up to it to really explain what it's like playing it. Because it's something kind of new with the genres smushed together. But yeah, so far it just seems like a lot of excitement. It's been really nice to see like a lot of players who had played the game maybe years ago coming back and the game has changed so much.
I am one of them. I'm definitely
Same
one
here.
Of them. Although it was really awesome when I came back. I had so many Xbox Game Pass perks waiting for me.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah.
I'm not one of them yet, but I'm going to be one of them.
So, I don't remember there being so much tutorial when I first played the game back then. And so I really was interested in these new quests and things to kind of act as a bigger tutorial. And also I was interested in the lore. I totally want to know more about that. If you've got some things to share, just the backstory of the world and that, like seeing the clones and stuff was a really good, like, reminder of everything. And
sure. I can take that. So the basic backstory of Super Animal Royale and Super Animal World is that, Super Animal World was an island theme park in which these genetic experiments, human-animal hybrids, called super animals, were sort of like, imagine you go to Disneyland and you've got, you know, all the like attractions and stuff, and you've got, but the mascots walking around rather than humans wearing suits are genetically modified to look like big walking cute mascots, right? And they have human and animal DNA mixed in. This was fun for a while until some of the animals organized in secret and rebelled, thus the beginning of the rebellion in Sovereign's Rebellion, and ejected the humans from the island quite forcefully. And the corporation, the Saw Corporation, in response to their big investment in genetic engineering and this island and this theme park that had become popular, was trying to figure out what to do. Do they just get rid of this whole thing and cut their losses? And then they get this idea that, well, they have this violent impulses clearly because of what they did to the humans on the island that one day. What if we make them fight each other and put it on television? And that is the Super Animal Royale. So when we enter the world, we are in the Super Animal Royale era. When you'd walk around and talk to NPCs and go through the story, you'll kind of learn about the events that led up to Super Animal World, the somewhat problematic theme park, becoming Super Animal Royale, the very problematic fight to the death.
Yeah, and obviously once the animals rebelled, no visitors would want to return to the park again.
This is why they're only humans. And then the lab labs, that is the Labrador, laboratory Labradors, took over the genetic engineering and continued to advance from there. Yeah, and you met them as all well in the world.
You mentioned there's like a whole bunch of animals. What kind of animals are already in the game, and are we seeing new ones with this expansion?
Yeah. Oh, it's so hard to list them all because there's more than 500 animal breeds. In the new for this patch are super hamsters, super emus, and super chinchillas, and those are the new core breed or core super animals. And then each one has subbreeds, different variants that you can unlock. So, yeah, there's quite a lot. We have like lots of mammals, lots of birds. We have sea creatures. There's super fish. Yeah. Yeah. The dragons. Do you say dragons?
Oh, I said lizards, but dragons being a kind of lizard, I suppose.
Yeah. And snakes. We finally added snakes earlier in 2022 because it was the year of the snake. So for Lunar New Year, we added snakes, but we knew that was coming for a long time. And we're thinking about how a super animal snake would work because snakes don't have arms and legs. So they have a robot suit that holds their snake body.
Because if you add arms and legs to a snake, they're just a lizard, right? And
yeah.
So, to make them still a snake, we give them the robot suit. Yeah.
I gotta find a snake now.
Just look for the cute scaly things. It's all good.
If you go to the bamboo resort, which is our kind of like Lunar New Year themed area, there's a giant Year of the Snake statue and a Year of the Snake NPC you can talk to right now in the middle there, because we're still in the Year of the Snake.
Yeah.
So all the speaking of events like that or holidays and stuff, do you have a winter holiday called Crispermas going on?
Mm-hmm.
What's that all about?
Crispermas is the time of year when super animals gather to celebrate the wonders of clustered, regular, interspersed, palindromic. Did I miss a word? Interspace, palindromic repeats. That is, CRISPR is the technology that currently exists that is used for, it's a gene splicing technology. So it uses a particular aspect of a bacteria called CRISPR that essentially acts as scissors for DNA and can slice out in a very targeted way. If you give it a sequence of DNA, it can go and hunt and find that sequence of DNA on its target and snip that out. And then you can then replace it with different DNA. So in the lore of our game, our the reason we have these genetic hybrids and sort of all the weird things, the giant animals, we have mini animals, we have all kinds of strange things on it, and mutant fish and all this stuff that you can catch. And CRISPR, I sort of like much advanced from the current state of CRISPR, which is not, cannot do this right now, but it can do some amazing things. Well, also because it'd be very unethical to do this, but it could do some amazing things in terms of targeted gene editing. And so CRISPRmas is what the super animals celebrate because CRISPR was essential to their creation.
Right. Okay. Very cool.
I'm curious to know, the game as of now is rated E10. Have you guys ever considered going like Happy Tree Friend route and going like super graphic violence with like an adult mode or a separate version that's just extreme violence?
Yeah, actually in our first prototype, I think this was like alpha or actually probably even pre-alpha, there was like blood splatters, but we made the conscious decision to not go super super dark with it, like keep the cute approachable aesthetic while still just making the lore more like dark and twisted under the scenes. If we ever did something like that, I feel like it would have to be a fully separate game to go full on twisted with it.
I also think that there's stuffed, and you could have like stuffing go full on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something really funny about, so we have the death explosions, right? And you can kind of like, it's a cosmetic that you can do. And like, one of the things that actually helped me get what this game was going for when I first got involved, because this is one of the earliest, I think, death explosions, is you can, you get shot, you fall down, and then you explode into spaghetti. That, and it, and then, and someone goes, oh, Mamma Mia. And it's like spaghetti and spaghetti and meatballs fly. And as soon as I it's funny that you mentioned that. I honestly remember that as like a moment it clicked, like, okay, I get the humor. I know how to do the humor for this game. Like, that's what they want to go for. That's what
is my, that death animation still right. available? Can I get that?
I'm sure it's available. I don't know where what cosmetic set that was in, but yeah.
Sounds amazing.
So for some of these new activities that you have going on, is there like gamification to them? Like, do you get points towards gear for doing well at these mini games and stuff?
Yeah. You earn experience, which helps you level up, and then that gives you progress on your Animal Pass and other systems. You get the game's currency that you can use for unlocking new cosmetics and stuff. So you, from doing the social hub activities, you still get progress similar to what you get in the battle royale. And we wanted we wanted to make it so that whether you were spending your time in the cozy activities versus spending your time in the battle royale, you were getting rewarded either way. Although there are certain things that like the rates of getting stuff are different depending on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. So what are the different mini games you've added? There's like fishing, there's a hamster ball race. Are there others that I've missed?
Bug catching.
The other big pillar is bug catching.
Bug catching, okay.
Yeah. And then there's the quests are just for all sorts of things that usually relate to different mechanics in the game, so that just by going through the main story, you're exposed to every different mechanic that exists and all the different modes across the game.
Yeah, including the new mini games. There's a whole fishing quest chain and a bug catching and a hamster ball racing quest chain. And
what are your the two of you? What are your favorites of the new mini games and activities?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think like hamster ball racing is the most, they're very like bug catching and fishing are very different than hamster ball racing. I really like racing games, so hamster ball racing is a lot of fun for me. And we have like the weapons, like a kart racer in it too. It has a very unique feel because it's a top down and then you're in these balls. So the physics are challenging to make the turns and everything.
I think that, I think I agree. Like hamster ball racing is definitely the most engaging. It kind of depends. We did this on purpose. It depends on like what speed you want to go now in SAR. So it used to be you go in there and you can play battle royale, and it's, you know, initially that was the only game mode, and it's very intense, right? You got to be on guard and you got to be really, really awake. And then we added the team mode, and that's a little easier, and the Walking Dead's a little easier. And then now hamster ball racing has to be the next level down, where it's still exciting, but it doesn't have that visceral thrill of getting killed, but it still gets your heart racing as you're trying to make those turns. And then all the way down to bug catching, you're chasing the bugs, right? But so they can get away. There's a little bit of a thrill. And then fishing is just like, I just want to sit here and then listen to the music and, you know, chat with my friends. Right. So there's this kind of nice continuum of things you can do now, depending on your mood when you enter the game, that I think is really distinct. And then I also want to say that I think that the questing, although like not a mode per se, because it spans all modes, I found, to be very, addictive is a loaded word, but you know, it really lures me on and on. It's like, oh, I just want to do one more quest. Oh, let me just turn in this one quest. Oh, they got one more quest, you know, like that feeling of the variety of activities you might go as each day your quests refill, and like, oh, I'm going to do a little hamster, and I'm going to do like, just get a little taste of everything. I mean, Animal Crossing has a little bit of this as well, but I feel like in this, because it's mixing the sort of cozier, like, oh, I'm going to catch a legendary fish, and then I'm going to go be a zombie chicken for a while. You know, it's like that variety of span of like very cozy, very, very like low heart rate activities, all the way up to like, oh, I got to get to Victory Island to pass this quest. I'm going to have to, you know, I'm going to have to sweat for a little while. Like, mm-hmm. I like the sort of like the way the quests ping pong you through the thing so that you're constantly stimulated in different ways at different levels.
I will say one thing that I enjoyed and I thought was a great way to help move people around the map and explore more was that you have like these like warm ocean fish and different types of areas that you can turn up on your map to see like where you might find a certain type of bug. And so that was a really cool way to move people around the map, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's yeah, having the bugs in the different areas and the different fish in the different areas. Exploration is another thing that really tried to encourage is get people to like not all congregate all the time in the Welcome Center, which you mm-hmm. still will have the biggest congregation of people there.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, but which is good. It's good to have a place where you know you can always find someone. Like that's also important. So we did put enough points of interest in that Welcome Center, but we tried to have little things to find everywhere, whether it's the different fish types or, you know, we have the superite shards that are hidden all over the map. That's kind mm-hmm. of just a findable item. Two, also there's just like NPCs hiding in, you know, various random spots in the map where you might not expect them to run into one. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're trying to use all the different parts of this great map that we've been, that our artists have been putting together for years.
Speaking of things you don't expect to run into, during the preview event, someone Uh-oh. During the event made a mention of dying on the world map. That was me. I'm the idiot who died on the world map. Do you want to explain to people how I died?
You talk about how I break games all the time. What the hell? How did you manage that? I've never even done that.
There's a way to die in the game, and I found it.
There is. That's true.
Yeah.
I don't know, Michael, are we talking about this yet or what? What?
I mean, I guess we should say spoilers for anyone who's listening that hasn't found this yet. They could, yes. like skip ahead a yes. minute or something. But,
yeah, exactly.
This was my co-founder added this to the game just randomly at one point when we're in the prototype and didn't tell anyone about it. And so when we were testing, we would go up to the north, it's in the north tundra, and just die. and it's really, really funny, unexpected moment. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, so I think I encountered it first. I don't know why, but this creature, which it wasn't, it was like programmer art. It wasn't figured out yet. Clog was like, I think bored one night, like, and just like wanted to do something like to surprise us, to like get, like as a prank on us. And it actually didn't have that limitation initially of staying in the tundra. It could find you anywhere on the map. And so whatever reason, I swear he hard coded it because it loved me. This thing would show up and smack me on the head wherever I was, whatever I was doing. And I'd be in there like trying to test something, like trying to do work, you know, see if some quest was working and whatever. And I just like, wham, here comes this monster and hits me over the head. And I remember Michael, I'm like, have you seen it yet? Has this thing? And you're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
For some reason, it loved you. It just kept killing you, seeing it.
Michael could not find it, so I don't know if that was hard coded or if that was, I was just very lucky. But we thought it was too much to have it be everywhere because like part of the thing is we want it to be relaxing, right? But I was like, this was too exciting of a moment. Like the thrill of being in this cozy mode and having this unexpected encounter with this monster was too thrilling. I'm like, we can't throw this away. We just need to restrict its like range a little bit, right? And then we rethemed it for, you know, like we did a proper thought about what is this thing and all this stuff, and that's how we ended up with what we have now. But yeah, that first experience of seeing that was just so hilarious. And it's been hilarious to watch players post their screenshots as they, you know, all like what just happened, you know, or their video clips and stuff like that. Has been actually one of the most fun things about this first week is because you'll never get that first time getting bopped by that thing again. You know,
yeah, that was a special moment. I kind of like the idea of it being anywhere on the map. It kind of, I don't know if anyone else played it, but it kind of reminds me of playing Final Fantasy 11, and in like some of the starting areas they'll have a really really powerful monster that'll just like walk around and you'll hear stomping noises when it gets close. And if you aggro it, it will just wreck you immediately because you're low level. And I just like the idea of walking around a map and just hearing like, like, oh, fuck, what did I do?
Yeah, it's really fun. The reason we restricted it is because you are spending a lot of time in this is supposed to be the counterpoint to the battle royale where you're always feeling hearing those footsteps, you know what I mean? And we want to make sure you can, once you figure it out, once you've had the first encounter, that you can be in some places where you're actually safe until you enter the battle royale or the tundra.
Yeah, it did also suck. Like early on before Clog added it, we were talking about, like, we wanted to create this, like, cozy mode as the counterpoint to the battle royale. But at the same time, it's like, well, in Super Animal World, it can't be totally cozy. It has to be at least a little bit, like, dark and twisted or strange. So it definitely, it fit that very perfectly once it existed.
Yeah, it's like the Super Animal World version of the joke, the twist where the eagle says, grab a gun in the trailer, right? It's like that moment for this mode is getting whacked by that character.
Loved it. It was such a fun moment to be. What was I supposed to die? And are you supposed to die in Life Sims? It was so fun. It's just such an enjoyable time. It is a free to play game. What kind of monetization is in this?
It's basically only cosmetics, so it's all optional. And then we like it to be player friendly. So for our, we have like battle passes in the game that are they're called animal passes, but we make it so they never expire. So if you pick one up during the current season, it'll always exist for you in the archive where you can reactivate it on a second track, and you actually earn progress on both at the same time. It doesn't like split it in half between them or anything. You just earn full experience on both. And then that also builds up a whole catalog of past seasons so that if you come into the game later, you can go back and purchase like old seasons. And there's just, they're available for a small discount during their current season as a reason to pick it up during the season rather than later. But outside of that, you just own them forever. And so you can take your time completing them.
That's how it should be. I hate FOMO in games like this. And this doesn't force that.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out. We've always thought a lot about the sort of negative side of free to play, you know, the FOMO, like the sort of monetization tactics, and try to do our best to balance it. We definitely have a lot of conversations about how to balance it so that, you know, obviously the game needs to make money, but we don't want players to feel like we're exploiting them. Like that's really important to us.
So how big is Pixel Studios?
I think it's got a mixture of we're fully remote, mixture of like part-time, full-time. So there's like, I think there's 17 of us now, but
okay.
And then maybe that adds up to like 10 or 11 people full-time when you add people together.
So that's pretty big scope for a small team. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We have that habit of trying to be a little overly ambitious with a small team, but
well, yeah, especially with live service. 'Cause you have all the, you know, community management side of it, right? That's its own problem, as well as development. And then all the art, all the cosmetics, all the like seasonal, like treadmill of content of getting new content out there, which we haven't been doing actually the last 2 years, really, as we've been working on this, but we're going to start doing again, you know, having our regular update back to our regular update schedule.
And what is in the future for Pixel? Like, what can we expect in the future for Super Animal World, Super Animal Royale? Are you guys going to officially rename it to Super Animal World?
That's a Like, we've debated that one a lot internally of should it just be renamed or keep the name? What are the pros and cons? So far, we've kept the name Super Animal Royale, but we're using the art for Super Animal World as the new game box art and everything now. Especially because I guess the way that we're thinking of this whole expansion is it's giving us like kind of a whole new foundation to build on top of, with Super Animal World being the kind of pocket for everything, because now we have this central social hub where you can launch into the multiple modes that we already have while also staying in it and doing the questing and stuff. So we have a lot that we can add now on both sides, like update the existing modes, hopefully add new modes, and then keep kind of building on all this cozy stuff in the social hub as well. So we're really looking forward to, after more than 2 years of just building this, to get back to like every quarter we're planning to do major updates to the game, adding more content to on top of all of this basically.
And speaking of scope creep, we did end up with this running gag where everything was like, we're going to push that to 2.1. Oh, that'll be 2.1. Oh yeah, let's move that to 2.1. I guess we're not going to have time for that. I guess that's a 2.1 thing. And I think I think by now 2.1 might be bigger than 2.0 was, which is to say 2.1 might also get waterfall into 2.2 and 2.3 and 2.4, which is to say that there's as much as we were able to pack into this one, there's probably equally as much or close to that we wanted to do and just had to eventually, you know, make some cuts. So I think just getting to everything we had in mind, you know, for this launch is going to keep us busy for a little while, as well as new ideas will come up, of course.
Mm-hmm. So we like talking about the weird stuff on this show. What is the weirdest thing that we might see in the future from Super Animal Royale? Like the weirdest animal, weirdest skin, weirdest explosion. I love the fact that I have a snow globe as a tombstone now.
Oh man, in a game so packed with weird stuff.
what are some of the highlights of weirdness?
I mean, For me, the weirdness is in the characters, because that's what I'm spending my time working on, and like, mm-hmm. if you talk to all the different characters that we just added and go down their weird quest chains, like, I mean, you know, I don't know if you've come across the Prophet of Banan, just as one example of quite a weird little side trip that you can take in the world. I mean, you mentioned the Monster of the North as well as like a weird thing that you can encounter. Like, I don't know about future stuff, because we have some definitely weird future ideas that we're planning that we can't talk about yet. But there are plenty of little weird moments. I mean, one thing is just, if you talk to an NPC, like, and then, you know, they just have one thing to say, talk to them again, because they all will. If you keep talking to them, they'll all give you a story, and some of them are quite strange. Yeah, so that's my vote.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I should even highlight it, but if you go into the restaurant Meet and Eat in the Welcome Center, that's one of the more twisted establishments on the island.
Yeah, you have to think about what it means to meet and eat a super animal.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything you guys wanted to bring up that we didn't mention?
I'll just say, you know, we're really excited to see how people interact with this over the coming months and how we're going to be able to grow from this foundation that we set, as Michael said. You know, I think that if you are a player who is interested in cozy, but not as much in Battle Royale, this would be a good, or maybe you're Battle Royale curious, like this would be a good opportunity to explore that a little bit more, in a way that in a community that's quite friendly for the most part. And, in a world where we've now made it so that, you can get a nice little rest between the more stressful moments. And so I'm hoping we're going to be able to expand, our audience and our base beyond purely competitive players, or maybe turn non-competitive players into competitive players as well.
That would be a fun change if I could get into competitive. I am bad at multiplayer games.
I feel you on that. And but I have found myself drawn more in by this. I like this version of Super Animal Royale much better because it does just lures me on to, it gets my competitive goat up a little bit more because of the questing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a really big hope with the game. It's like just so battle royales can be very punishing, and that's part of the appeal of them too, is just like trying again and getting a little better over time. But we did really want this to kind of make it a lot more accessible, and so as you're just going along and doing story quests, we're hoping that's like subtly teaching you the mechanics as you play in the more cozy space, so then when you hop into the competitive mode, you're sort of naturally getting better and better at all that stuff too.
Very good. Well, Michael and Ruben, I want to thank you two for coming on, hanging out with us. Bree, did you have any other questions you want to ask?
I do. I have one question because it hasn't been mentioned yet. Any plans to do any more achievements or trophies in the future now that you've got some new stuff to play with?
Yeah. Yes. I think we need to go back and look at exactly all the platforms, how we can add those, because it was something that I think that we really should do, but there's different requirements for each different platform.
Yes, I know how you're able to do that. Yeah. Platinums and they have different stuff. Xbox is a little easier to do what they call title updates. But yeah. Because I think you've had a lot of fun publishers stuff to play with now.
Big advantage of achievement title updates.
There is that, but no, I think you guys have lots of fun things to play with, like getting a legendary fish, or you know, winning hamster ball races, or something along those lines that I think would be fun for achievement purposes to help give people some extra gamification to move them through the new content. Like that would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually one more thing on our 2.1 list that we
it's hard to overstate the extent to which we just like really barely made it to the finish line before the end of the year, you know. I mean, just because this really was a huge lift. Again, 17 people and not even all full time and all that stuff. And then in addition, like the thing we, you know, when we were back in early access and only releasing on Steam, it was one thing. But in addition to managing a big live service multiplayer experience, managing like simultaneous console and PC releases on all the consoles is just like another, it's another layer of what makes us, you know, kind of biting off more than a small studio typically does. But yes, we'll get to it for sure.
2.1, it's coming.
2.1. Yeah.
Speaking of consoles, I might as well ask one more quick question. Any thoughts of a native Switch 2 version being worked on?
Definitely something we're interested in. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what we can do. But yeah, we're definitely very interested in it. The game already runs really well on Switch 2, gets good frame rates and everything like that. But it would be fun to also see what types of things we can take advantage of with a native version. Yeah,
I think everybody that we ask that says, "Oh yeah, we'd love to if we could get a dev kit."
yeah. If you know someone with a dev kit, let us know.
Well, where can people keep up to date with you and what you guys are doing?
We actually redesigned our website too for this. So animalroyale.com has a new fresh coat of paint, and then we're on all the social media channels, mostly as at Animal Royale. A few of them like Instagram or Super Animal Royale. And then we have a pretty active Discord server, with artwork, game feedback, a bunch of different community programs, content creators, lots going on in there. So you can find tournaments, community run tournaments and that type of thing in there.
Very, very awesome. Again, I want to thank you two for coming on, hanging out with us. Super Animal Royale / World out now on all the platforms. Get it. It is free to play. Give it a go. Have some fun. We are going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show. Michael and Ruben, do you have any final words to end this interview?
Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it. Yeah. It was fun. Yeah. Fun to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
And sorry again about the Discord shit.
Oh, yeah, we didn't get to wrestling.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to the Pixile Games team for coming on. Michael and Ruben hanging out with us, chatting about Super Animal Royale and World. Again, give that a go now. But we got more show to take care of. Bree, how was your day?
Well, actually, yesterday was also weird. I went to the real-life liminal space horror known as IKEA. So... that was an experience. If y'all have never been to an IKEA, it's kind of a weird dystopian thing. It's bizarre.
With tasty meatballs.
Yeah, I didn't eat the meatballs.
Oh, come on, Bree.
Yeah, there was something.
We told her she was doing it wrong.
There was
something about the whole atmosphere of the place that made eating there off-putting.
Like, I don't even think we should continue this story without the meatballs.
Oh. But anyway, yeah,
the meatballs and the mac and cheese is like a great combo. Like,
don't forget the lingonberries.
We have to put together a couch now.
Okay, I did that like 10 years ago.
That's a whole thing.
Yeah,
we
should pull today, me you're going. There's some stuff I need.
Oh, okay. But yeah, so and then today started off rough for other reasons, and then the basement flooded a little bit.
Oh, there's no!
Mild sewage smell. To the water that came up, it was a little bit of a mess. Injury totally handled it like a champ and got it all cleaned up. Yeah.
Yay, injury.
Yeah, he's on.
Yeah. Was not expecting that.
So, like, sewage came up, or?
It definitely had a smell to it. I actually, so when we came back from IKEA, we smelled poop and thought that the cats had, like, not shat covered everywhere. Their shit. Yeah, and it turned out that Teak did in fact shit all over the stairs. She had like some stuff connected to her and she shed it all the way up the stairs. So I came home to clean up that. So yeah, and then earlier today I was like smelling something. I thought maybe she had shit herself again. And nope. There was a flood.
Of thankfully it wasn't water.
Bad. Yeah.
Was anyone else's week better?
It would kind of have to be.
Oh, man. Lloyd, how are you doing? You haven't... have you been on before? I can't even remember at this point.
Has he ever been on the show? Yes.
He's been on like twice now.
Yeah, this is my third time.
Okay.
I was on for the news for a State of Play quite a while back.
That's right. You are our PlayStation fan for that.
Yes. And then I was on last week for the Game Awards.
Yeah.
How did I forget that?
Good question.
That I was on for PlayStation or
literally the Game Awards? Last week. I thought for some reason
you,
I thought
you mentioned how bad your memory is, and that was only a couple of minutes ago. You mentioned that.
Yeah,
man, I'm telling you, like there's
you also played Dispatch and don't remember it. So
I did. Yeah. We reviewed Dispatch. I take Halcyon, which is a sleeping aid. It is a older one that is restricted due to addictive properties and how bad it can fuck your world up. And I haven't taken it for a while. And on what was it, Sunday, I took it. And I apparently played Dispatch for 40 minutes and don't remember ever launching it.
I remember you talking about it on the last episode.
Yeah, I played it again after that, but I...
Okay.
Like, the first time I played it, I have no recollection.
Yeah, it's one of several games that came out this year that I'm looking forward to eventually
playing. Can I buy some of that off you? It's funny, I have been taking Halcyon for literally for years at this point. It's the only sleeping pill that has helped me. I've read Ambien, some other stuff.
Ambien's the devil.
Yeah, today I went to the doctor and they're like, you need to sign a medication agreement form. I'm like, a what? And they're like, because Halcyon is a controlled substance, you need to sign this agreement. You have to take a urine test. You can't have any kind of interaction with marijuana. I'm like, listen, I live off marijuana at this point in my life. And she,
I sell drugs to the community.
The doctor was like really confused. I'm like, yeah, I've been smoking weed for years while taking Halcyon. And she's like, and you haven't had any issues? I'm like, no. And she's like, and is it like street stuff? I'm like, no, here's my card. I am prescribed, it is legal, it is medicinal. I've never had any kind of issue in the past where it was a controlled substance that had to be fucking signed for, that if they want they could count my pills. Like, what the fuck? They're like, you can never take more than the prescribed dose. Like, I've taken two before and it hasn't helped me, and sometimes I need to take a third after a couple hours. Like, that happens. Sorry. I don't know. Whatever. Jacob, how was your week?
Jacob.
Oh, he went BRB. Is Aki around? I know she was.
It was all that poop
sickness
talk
issue earlier. I don't know if Aki's doing okay or not. But hopefully she's right over there. Should we chat a little bit of news?
Sure.
I don't have too much week. I've only got three little things to go over quick. First is that Ubisoft has acquired Amazon Games Montreal and the March of Giants IP, which is a MOBA. Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Dispatch is hitting Switch and Switch 2 January 29th.
That's exciting.
It is. Hopefully Xbox is next.
I'm much more likely to play Dispatch on a Switch than I am on PC, so that's good news for me.
Indeed. Then last news I have, Stalker 2 got a new Stories Untold update this week that adds 8 new quests, 7 new locations, 6 new characters, and, quote, a unique weapon. It is a free update for all owners. And is also part of the Xbox Countdown sale, which is going on now. Ooh. It's on sale. The Ultimate Edition is on sale for $66 from $110.
Wow.
So I am eyeing that one up. I am eyeing way too much up. Every time I turn my controller on Xbox, it's like, more games are on your wish list than we told you an hour ago.
Yep.
I emailed that 40 games are on my wish list.
Jeez.
Yeah, try being somebody who plays across like 3 different platforms and it's on sale everywhere. Okay, where is it on the best sale?
Yeah, I went through my wish list and I just, for the shits and giggles, I added a bunch of stuff to my cart to see if I were rich what I would need. I think like $400.
Yeah.
What do you need $400 for? 30 games. What do you need 30 games for? Don't.
Games.
Yeah.
The sale is insane. There is so much stuff on sale. Like, stuff I've never seen on sale before is on sale.
So. Yeah.
Bree, what news do you have?
Humanity, the game, is sunsetting its game servers close to the end of March. You'll still be able to play the main game, but the user-generated stages will be discontinued. There are some achievements and or trophies associated with that. Is that game on, is that game only on Xbox? Is it on
PlayStation? No, it's on PlayStation.
I have no idea.
No, it was on PlayStation first.
All right. Oh, there you go. So, yeah, they're going to be discontinuing the servers.
That's a bummer. That's still fairly new, too.
Yeah.
It's a couple years old now.
Yeah. But that's the only news I had.
Carnage just linked, two more indie games are getting delisted with Gravity Oddity and Guilt Battle Arena.
Hmm.
Going bye-bye.
Well.
Damn. I wonder if I have either. Lloyd, any news you want to talk about?
Well, since you were talking sales, I'll say the Steam Winter Sale just hit as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's more things I can't afford to buy, even on sale.
True.
And with all the games going offline, I think I'll just say Marvel Rivals just hit its 1 year anniversary and is still going strong.
Yay,
and an online game that lasts.
You know, an online game I miss.
Yes, I miss it too.
Knockout City.
Yeah.
Knockout City was so good.
It was.
I'm gonna play that again.
Dodgeball. Hey, it's a ball. It counts.
It is.
Yeah, Carnage. It's actually 54 weeks as of today.
Aki sale pain. I don't know if Aki's only in Twitch chat or if she's still with us or.
I think she said she's not voice at this moment.
Mm.
She's still in the channel, though.
Yeah.
He is. That was Jacob, and he's muted. Jacob, what news do you have? I don't have anything because I'm muted. Good stuff. No talk right now. Okay. Should we move on to the reviews, then?
I thought we were hopefully going to talk about our favorites of the year. Some of us
could,
Out there on Tuesday.
Yeah, you and Lloyd could talk about them.
For sure.
What are some of your highlights of the year?
So I keep an indie list of my favorites, and I don't play too many other games outside of the indies, really. I did like what I played of Split Fiction, but I didn't finish it, so I don't know that I can count that in my top of the year. But
I count it in my top.
Well, you got to play it. But most of my stuff is indie stuff, but there's some big indies in here. I don't have a definitive, like, these are my top three games, but these are definitely, or that these are, you know, this is the number one, etc. But my top three on this list are Lost Records, Bloom and Rage, Clair Obscur Expedition 33, and Power Wash 2. Those are some pretty big indie games. So yeah, and then, you know, I've got like 20 more games on this list that I thought were pretty good and worth mentioning, like Moving Houses, Tempopo, Crime Scene Cleaner, Keeper. Popo. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, Keeper got mentioned on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I still Viewfinder, need to play that one. Ugh.
Revenge of the Savage Planet was really good. Some other just fun ones thrown in there. Thank Goodness You're Here was really good. Bad End Theater was a fun little visual novel. Lego Voyagers is on that list of the top 20 something. And honorable mention is Rat Shaker.
You enjoyed that one?
I did. I really, really did. It's a short experience. It is absolutely bizarre, and I thought it was worth having on my just watch the trailer, Aki. Just go look Rat Shaker. It's all one word.
And just watch the
trailer.
I watched part of a stream of somebody playing that, and my reaction was, what the hell am I watching? Because I think it was later game.
Oh, it's from start to finish, it's weird. Just hearing the rat screaming is fantastic.
Yeah, that was a weird fucking game. Arnage saying the ID streamed it. That was... That was
how do you make that unique. Not dirty seeming? Yeah, exactly, Aki. What the fuck are you looking at? That's it's worth mentioning though, because it was so entertaining. So Lloyd, what about you? What were some of your multi-platform?
Yeah, I'd have to say if I'm just looking at the number of hours I played, my top two games are Sea of Thieves and Marvel Rivals.
But they're not new games.
No, I spent 150 hours in Sea of Thieves, and over the past year, I've spent 500 hours in Marvel Rivals.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Split Fiction is definitely one of my top games of the year. Okay. I played fully through that. I also replayed through A Way Out and It Takes Two because people wanted someone to play it with.
Nice.
So I replayed A Way Out with Aki and It Takes Two. I replayed with both Aki and Pickles. Firebreak was fun, but I wouldn't put it as one of my top games of the year.
Yeah, same.
Thank goodness you're here. I had to look at when I played that because it was early in the year. But yeah, that's good. But the rest of my top list, I didn't think a game where you play as a single Lego stud would make me get choked up.
Yeah.
So Lego Voyagers is way up there.
Yeah, for sure.
Midnight Walk. Which I think is an indie. Didn't really look into that side. Didn't look into that side of it too much, but it's a good game I'd recommend. South of Midnight, which I heard Aki raving about as well. That's on the top of my list. And Peak. Peak has been fun.
Very cool.
What about you, Jacob? What are some of your highlights of the year in gaming?
Honestly, Joe and I were discussing this earlier today because I had to fill out a survey and like they mentioned like what was your game of the year, and I looked through my stuff and I was like, wow, I played a lot of absolute shit this year. The unfortunate thing is that it's just like, I mean, there was some standout stuff, but yeah, I don't know. Like, there wasn't much. I mean, I played the shit out of MLB The Show. Still playing the hell out of it. Halls of Torment. I've been playing that. Creepy Redneck Dinosaur Mansion 3 is probably my favorite game that came out this year. Because I really... Strange Scaffold, like, pretty much anything that they release, I enjoy. Yeah.
Same.
That was just such an unexpected thing, and I appreciate the twists and turns that the story takes with that. But there's also, one of the things I like about doing all these reviews is that like I get to play like so many different games, but at the same time, because I have to play so many damn games, like there's so much stuff that like I just never get around to finishing, and like I wanted to really finish Culebra, and the Souls of Limbo. Culebra,
yeah.
But now also like month. There were. that's true. I got 12 days to finish it up before the end of the year. There was actually a couple of ACA titles this year that I was like, hell yeah, man. Because I'd never really gotten to play with them. The Jet, oh my God, I'm blanking on it. ACA Air, what was it? Air Combat 22. That one and the jet ski one. I'm blanking on it.
Aquajet?
Aquajet, thank you. Those I was having a shitload of fun with. And I'm really glad that Hamster Corp is bringing those to Xbox now, because I mean, those were huge arcade games like back in the day. I mean, like literally huge. I mean, like they took up like a ton of fucking space at the arcade, and like not exactly the easiest thing to port for home consoles. And boom, now we got them. You just enjoy it from your living room. So the fact that ACA has returned to Xbox, that's a big plus for me.
I really hope we get some of the older ACA games, because
did you see that there's a bunch on sale right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm stoked. Like,
Neo Geo ones, aren't they?
I believe so. But the thing is, like, some of these, I don't think they've ever even been on sale before. Like,
probably not. The hamster ones don't go on sale often at all.
Yeah. And usually if they do, it's like King of Fighters and that's it. So but I remember usually Metal Slug just being like the standalone titles that would go on sale, not like the ACA ones, you know, like back on the Xbox 360.
Yeah, I don't know. I do not know. I just, there's hundreds of ACA games that they already released that I hope a couple of them they revisit and port over to Xbox. Would be really, really nice, but who knows?
I hope they port them all and like the take the ones that got delisted and make ACA 2 versions of them.
Which ones got delisted?
There's a... Damn it, you just had to fucking ask, didn't you?
I don't remember any ACAs getting delisted.
There's a couple that you can't buy anymore. Huh. Fuck me.
No, I'm good.
Shut up.
No, I will not.
Yeah, you shut the fuck up. You shut your whore mouth. You shut up. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Ain't nobody ask you shit. ACA Neo Geo Super Sidekicks 2 is delisted. It's a soccer game.
I had no idea.
I want to say that all the ones that were delisted, like they were like weird soccer or sports related ones. So I don't know if it's like licensing with like actual sport teams or some shit.
Yeah, I don't think any of those will come back because the Neo Geo line was completely separate from the ACA line. Now the ACA 2 line is completely separate from those two, which is why Xbox is getting this, the ACA 2, but only on Series. Where PS4 and Switch are still getting ACA 1 releases of these games with less features and not as good performance, obviously. But like Xbox One never got any of the ACA game, the original ACA games. And it's a bummer because I don't think we ever will.
Yeah, this is weird. Jackal. It's like I'm looking through all this shit and it like legit is just, it's all soccer games.
Weird.
That's weird. Jinx.
Huh. All right. Well, anything else anyone wants to talk about, or should we dive into our reviews?
I'm good for reviews.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Let's kick things off with Godbreakers, developed by To The Sky, published by Thunderful Publishing, released October 23rd on Steam for $27.99, with the winter update launching December 11th. Take control of every fight with ferociously fluid combat as you chain aggressive combos, cancel moves mid-swing, and steal enemy powers to turn them against their master. Play up to 4-player co-op to craft the perfect team setup and topple brutal bosses across different worlds. Lloyd, you checked out Godbreakers. What is going on in this game?
Well, the game starts out with a warning for people with any kind of photosensitivity, so yeah, probably a good thing Aki didn't jump in.
Probably.
Well, in Godbreakers, you start out with two different archetypes you can choose from. Archetypes are your classes. You can unlock 5 different ones through gameplay. I tried the first three, and you get different weapons, but they don't really feel all that different. They have different stats, different health pools, but basically you get a little bit faster with less health, or you get a little bit slower with more health. And the slower people do a bit more damage per hit. And when they say you can steal the opponent's abilities, when the opponent's health gets down to a certain point, their health bar turns green for a split second. If you hit the right button, when it's green, you jump into them, they explode, and you come out with their ability that you can use once.
That's it?
That's it. And doing the action of doing that is called a god break, hence the name of the game.
Now it's all coming together.
Yeah.
I said the same thing my last orgy.
Did anybody hear anything? No, didn't think so.
No.
Along with the five classes... Along with the five extra classes you unlock through gameplay, you also get to unlock new looks for the body of your character and new heads. The heads are actually legitimately different heads. The new bodies are just different color schemes. There seems to be some kind of a story in it, but it comes in the form of massive lore dumps at various points, usually after you beat the final boss of an area. And you just have to stand there, just clicking continue over and over again, or until you either get to the end and it starts cycling, or you say, enough of that, and just leave. When you start a run, you get to choose between two different planets that you can start in. Once you complete one of them, you move up to the second level and you get to pick between, surprise, surprise, two different planets. If you complete one of those, then you move up to level three where there is a single planet. They say there is a lot of replayability. The planets don't change.
No.
No. So I don't know how much, if you make it through everything, I'm not sure how much replayability there is. I've tried it solo. I tried it in a group of two. I tried it in a group of three, one of whom was Bree. So she'll probably have some thoughts here at some point as well.
Yep.
With more people, it was more fun. From what I could tell, the fights do not scale with the size of your group.
That's weird.
Yeah. Or if they do scale, it's very minorly. Things were much easier with three people than they were with one. And before anybody says, yes, I'm not great at games, but I was still involved in the group of three. As you go through and you defeat people, they drop various items, currency. The items can help you on the run. They don't last from one run to the next. The currency does not last from one run to the next, but there is a merchant right before the final boss of each planet. And there you can buy upgrades, you can trade items, you can buy a resurrect for one of your teammates if they've been downed. They don't respawn on their own any other way. You also pick up what's called echoes, and those echoes can be used to buy bonuses in between runs. And those bonuses stay, once you buy it, it's there unless you redeem to rebuy your, to rebuy all your different bonuses if you want to try something else. And all of this is pretty standard for action roguelites, and which is how this game is advertised. And I will say, as of all the action roguelites I've played, This is definitely one of them.
Yeah. That's a that's a fair assessment.
Yes.
Bree, what are your thoughts on this one?
So I would say the game is just a series of arenas, really. You get into a small arena fighting area with some monsters that appear and you kill them. Then you go on to the next area, which is another little arena. And then you get a big sub-boss arena fight. And then you get a merchant. And then you get a big arena fight. And that's kind of how your runs go. And like you get cosmetics for doing certain things, like a large amount of damage or god-breaking the mini-boss or, you know, stuff like that, which was pretty cool. The first time I went in and did a run with Lloyd, I died and couldn't figure out how to come back during the run. So I just sat there spectating Lloyd for what seemed like a really long time, which was not a fun way to do multiplayer for me.
Doesn't sound it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually he figured out that we could buy the resurrection, but it was just an unreasonable amount of time to just spectate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only way to get her back in was to buy that resurrection at the merchant at the end of that area.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah. The world was interesting enough. You had like this anime style cube graphic thing going on and these large like godheads in robes watching you. So that was interesting. The godbreak power was interesting once you get used to using it. You just have to like time it right in the chaos to hit the Y button or whatever, and then you can borrow the monster's power for a few attacks. It was a neat mechanic. I thought the movement was pretty fun. Like you can chain up to 3 dashes together. You can get more eventually, I think. Otherwise, there's no run. You have just like a base speed that you can improve upon with pickups.
Yeah, but, one of the items that gets dropped does allow you extra dashes.
Yeah.
Because I ended up with 4 at one point, but as soon as we went back to the hub after a run ended, it was gone and I didn't have it in any future run.
Hmm.
Oh, man. This one seems like it's kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, the game is described as fast-paced on the store page.
You can take your time with it.
I would not describe it as fast-paced.
Hmm.
Everything with the starting speeds, even the faster character I tried, seemed slow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let us talk price on this one. It came out back in October for $27.99 because the winter update just launched, and it's the winter sale. It is on sale until January 5th for $16.79, 40% off. Full price is $28, though. What is your verdict at $28?
Well, I'd say this isn't a bad game, but there's nothing to make it stand out from any other game of this genre. It does have the option for public lobbies, but I checked several times when I was online with it, and the only lobby that was ever there was the one I made so that Pickles and Bree could join me for our testing.
Ouch.
Yeah. So I would say it doesn't stand out. If you have people to play it with and you all want to play it, sure. It's fine. But I would give it at best a try it if you have friends to play it with. If you're looking at playing it solo, I'd be hesitant on a try it.
That's fair. Bree, your thoughts?
I had an okay time with the game. It worked fine. It just wasn't really my thing. I thought the world was kind of interesting enough. Like the graphics and combat were decent. But at that price, I could give it a try it. I'd grab it on sale if you were going to grab it at all.
Which it definitely is now. And there's a demo. Yeah. So
yeah,
you can always, check out you the can demo. Always give that a go if you, if you are interested. I'm checking out the Steam charts. 24-hour peak, 150. So yeah, the community needs to rally behind this one.
I checked. When we were playing, there were about 220 people.
Yeah.
The all-time peak didn't even hit 1,500.
Oh, 1,447. Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right. Well, Lloyd, that is it for you. Are you going to stick around or are you heading out?
I'm going to stick around and chat, but I think I'm going to jump out of the call.
All righty. Well, thank you as always for joining us. I guarantee you I will forget you the next time you come back because
Lloyd, I won't forget you.
And senile.
I appreciate that, Jacob. It's the only thing I appreciate you, but
I forget Jacob.
It's the only thing I appreciate about you, but I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Lloyd. I didn't understand that, but I knew it. I know it came deep from your heart.
Love it. Lloyd, any final words?
Death is only the end if you assume the story is about you.
Those are good ones.
Bye.
Next up, Sophia's Animal Clinic, Mission Wildlife Park, developed by Kai Piranha Games, published by Join Dots. It released December 4th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $24.99. Your veterinary adventure begins at the wildlife park. Help injured and sick animals such as horses, deer, ducks, donkeys, goats, rabbits, and many more. With a great deal of empathy, you examine symptoms, make diagnoses, and treat over 30 different diseases. Each animal has individual needs and is waiting for your expert help. Jacob, review this game with a great deal of empathy.
So Sophia's Animal Clinic is, believe it or not, you're running an animal clinic.
I don't believe you.
It's true. And in this clinic, you have to take care of, would you believe it, animals.
No, I don't.
You're gonna have to convince me
on this.
You're right. It's actually a gazelle romance simulator. It's very strange. So the game starts to, it's a first person simulator that you're running around this like huge wildlife preserve, and you're bringing some of these animals back as you're trying to find ones that are sick. And that involves searching high and low throughout all this terrain. But most of the time, it's just, you're given these mission prompts that are like, oh, do you want to work on a horse, a zebra, a capybara, like a gazelle? What do you want to work on? And like, it'll list like what the thing is, what's wrong with each one. And the gameplay for all of these issues is fairly similar. You have to gain the animal's trust first. So you're going to calmly walk up to it. You're going to pet it for a bit, you know, nice. And like it actually makes you move, your hands, you know, like over the animal. So you pet it and like, okay, now it's like, now this wild animal now just suddenly, you know, is totally cool with you. Like, and then you have to figure out what's wrong with it. Do you have to give it some sort of injection? Like, do you, like, is something infected? Like, what's happening? And so you have to examine the animal by walking around it and hoping that the game will show you the very tiny spot on this animal's body that you have to click on to then treat them for whatever ailment is happening with them. And pretty much as soon as this yellow circle appears, you know, then you're like, oh, okay, there's the zit, or there's the cut, or there's like, you know, like some sort of weird ass skin condition that you have to treat. And then you have to give it usually like some sort of injection, or you have to clean up the spot. And then, yeah, like as you treat them, you get to watch them, like, you know, run around your wildlife preserve. It is fairly simple. I wanted to like the idea of this game because, like, it seemed like something that was great for my kids. But fairly regularly, when I'd bring them into my doctor's office or my vet's office to treat them, it suddenly became a crapshoot as to whether the game was going to completely freak out and make it so I couldn't even like examine the creature, because what would happen is that my the reticule, like the area where you're aiming at, on the animal. Sometimes the game would just make it go all the way up into the upper left or right hand corner, and you couldn't bring it down. And so you're just like you're just stuck in this position where you can't even look at the animal itself. And then so I'd have to quit out, restart the game, and then hopefully it would actually load properly. And this actually got, like, I mean, it didn't happen just once. It got fairly frequent. And, you know, so, like, pretty much it was just, like, this constant process of having to quit out, you know, reload, see if it worked this time. If it did, cool, keep going. If it didn't, quit out again, reload. So that was unfortunate, but... You know, after that, you know, it goes into, like, all these different treatments, as I was saying. Like, you know, sometimes you have to give them injections. Sometimes you have to mix up their food. Like, there's a lot of different stuff in here. And I think it's, like, there's a decent amount that's going to keep kids interested in this game. But, like, for the love of God, not if it's going to glitch like this. Like, so often. And it's just... And on top of it, I've got some feelings about some of the art that's used in the game, and I can't find any confirmation, because, of course, this game did not release on Steam as of yet. It's only an Xbox and PlayStation game so far, but I believe that the characters that you interact with, like, which are just simple drawings and stuff, and some of the posters on the wall, I believe that they may be AI-generated. Now a lot of the stuff does not look like, you know, like a lot of the in-game, assets don't look like they are. It's just like, it seems like it's a lot of simple 2D wall art or, like conversation stuff, but it's still like, come on, man. Like all the humans have that like Pixar look to them. That you see so often, and a lot of the wall art has, like, it's not quite a P-tint, but it's close to it, that's and it's just... Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, if some of the stuff gets fixed up, like, this could be, like, a try-it for kids, but in its current state, with, like, the frequent, like... having to restart just so hopefully things work. Right now, it's a deny it.
All right, that's fair.
I was honestly hoping that this would have been like a pretty decent game, because I know my youngest would be all over this. But I also know my youngest will not tolerate having to constantly restart in hopes of missions working properly.
No. All right, moving on. Ultimate Sheep Raccoon, developed and published by Clever Endeavor Games. Released December 9th, Xbox One, Series, and PC. Switch and Switch 2, PS4, PS5, and all the PC platforms. $19.99. Race to victory through a mayhem-filled obstacle course of deadly traps you built with friends while pulling off sick tricks. Ultimate Sheep Raccoon is a bike racing party game where you and your friends build a course of ramps, obstacles, and traps. Dodge hazards, do crazy tricks, and use power-ups to get ahead of the competition. Pedal to victory with up to 8 players locally, online, and cross-platform. Bree, you and I played this one. I had a good time with it. What were your thoughts on it?
I had a pretty good time once I started playing with other people. So this is a party game where you collaboratively create tracks and ride your bike and try and get to the finish. It's from the creators of Ultimate Chicken Horse, a game I swear I played before, but I don't remember much of, only to find out I never got a single achievement in the game. So I must have dreamt it or watched other people play it on streams or something. So the only comparison I have to Chicken Horse is based on a fuzzy memory. Either way, I hear this plays a little different. There are 8 characters you can play with. Of course, there's a chicken and a horse. And then, of course, there's a sheep and a raccoon. And then there's a monkey, a lion, a gator, and an axolotl. And they are all cute on their little bikes. And you can earn cosmetics for them as you play the game. But you earn cosmetics at random for each specific animal. So you might earn a bicycle helmet for your raccoon, and a set of knee pads for your chicken, but you can only use them on their respective animals. You can play local or online. In local mode, you can play challenge mode with user-created levels, like speedruns and obstacle courses. You can use the level editor to make your own levels to share online. And of course, there's party mode, which is the standard game mode, where you build the level and race. I felt like solo was kind of boring, but this is a party game. So after I played online more, I got the hang of the basics. Then I started having much better time with it. In online party mode, you have private or public lobbies for up to 8 people, and you kind of have to work together to get across the map initially. There's like base levels with large gaps in the middle for you to place bits of track and other things to get from the starting line to the finish line as best as you can. There are rounds of the game that you choose different things like ramps and obstacles that you pick from as a group, and then you have a placement round and then a racing round. So you might pick a ramp and place it while your other competitors are doing the same. Then you all race at the same time, which is kind of chaos, and you see who gets there first. And then there's a scoreboard, and you play several turns like this until someone reaches a points threshold or a certain number of turns passes, in which case the person closest to the threshold wins first place. Some things may happen that will adjust your points while you play. The faster you get to the finish line over your opponents, the more points you get, assuming you get there at all. Then you do tricks in the air, and you can collect coins, or you can get to the finish line post-mortem, meaning you crash near the finish line and either your body or your bike goes through the gate. Even if you came in first, you aren't guaranteed to stay in first place, as someone who came in second or third might have picked up a coin or did more tricks than you. Post-mortem cuts your points in half for finishing the turn that way, but hey, sometimes like that's all you need to get ahead. Going back to obstacles and track pieces and the like, there are lots of things to choose from. There are solid ramps or platforms, there's curvy ones, and then there's grind rails that you have to press the A button to magnetize to and then move across with your bike. That's the easy part. Then there's also trash can cannons that launch you. There's things you can swing on at the press of a button. There's crumbling platforms, springboards, fans, and speed boosts. And then there's like obstacles you can put in the way, like rotating gates, TV lasers, swinging hammers, spiky balls, and so on to trip people up. Oh, almost forgot like a whole category of thing during your rounds. Besides building materials, there's boosts. Every couple of turns, there'll be a round of 4 boosts you can choose from that work out to your advantage, like extra jumps, higher jumps, extra speed, honey to slow people down. There's like an umbrella that'll slow your fall. There is an alternate control scheme if you find yourself struggling with the main controls. The base controls seemed fine to me, but I was just terrible at keeping track of like my raccoon at the starting gate and getting used to the physics. But Joe, I know you mentioned you played with the other scheme.
Yes, and I found it so much easier to play with the alternate control scheme.
Okay, very cool.
I think you should give it a go.
I will. I also played a little with the level editor. You can make your own levels as a challenge to get achievements to share with friends. It's pretty easy to customize and test your tracks. Not something I'm super interested in doing all the time, but it's a cool feature. The art style reminds me a little of like early 2000s flash animation. Your user interface is like a Windows 98 PC, maybe even Windows 95. I don't know. It looked pretty old. I couldn't date it. There is a CRT filter on the game you can turn off if that bothers you. The music was kind of repetitive, but fun. The game is crossplay, but you can also turn that off if you want. Getting into lobbies is pretty easy. I didn't notice any major connection issues. There were a couple glitchy things where people got stuck on the level or it didn't end right. Had a glitch where 2 players started in front of the starting line and it borked the whole ending of the level and we all had to quit.
Yep. I had an issue a couple of times where I would be unable to zoom out while placing items and I would just have to fucking guess where I'm placing things.
Yeah. Sometimes the custom levels don't work when you go to access them through the level discovery with a code. So, like, I couldn't check out Joe's custom made level. I also tried a few times to pop into something like the level editor, and the buttons to go back to the main menu or the lobby didn't work, and I had to exit the game entirely.
Hmm.
That was not fun.
No.
No. So I had fun with this, and will totally play more of this, just not by myself. Yeah, I had fun playing with Joe and Carnage and some randos.
This is very much similar to Ultimate Chicken Horse in that if you're trying to play this by yourself, you're not going to have a good time. This is a party game first and foremost. Sure, they have a challenge mode, which adds some solo stuff you could do. But the real meat of the game is either with a room full of friends, with a Discord full of friends while online, or even with randos. This is one of the very few games that I will play with randos.
I feel like most of the people in the lobby, in the public lobby, were team players. Like, you have to work together a little before you can start, like, really trying to make it a challenge for people to get across the gap. Yeah, and getting the physics down. If you can't
get to the finish, no one can get to the finish.
Yeah, they can't. Yeah, exactly. But and like getting the physics down is a must. Timing your jumps is crucial. It's pretty darn fun.
Well, it is a $20 game. Also on Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. What are your thoughts on Ultimate Sheep Raccoon?
The price feels a tiny bit high to me. But maybe that's partly because I'm not a huge party games person. But I get that running a server-based game takes money. I hope they can tweak the little things that improve the game, like some of those glitches I mentioned. I'm kind of on the fence on how to rate this. Like, a try it isn't quite right, so I'm going to say maybe more like a buy it on a sale. But if you're on the fence about whether or not you should play it, check it out on Game Pass. I really had fun once I started playing it. Yeah.
I can agree that this is a tough one to rate. Honestly, if you're playing by yourself and you don't plan on going online, deny it. You're not going to have fun. If you're going to go online or you have friends to play with, absolute must own this and Chicken Horse. Get them both.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and play Chicken Horse now.
Cool. I'll play with you.
All right.
Cool. Next up, Arcade Archives 2, Rock in Rope, developed and published by Hamster, released December 10th, Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5, $9.99. Rock in Rope is an action game released by Konami in 1983. I was 2. In pursuit of the lucky bird, the rock, you must climb higher and higher through various locations, including cliffs and ice caves. Use the rope, which can be fired diagonally upwards, to create the optimal route for a safe ascent. Jacob, what is Rock in Rope?
Rock in Rope is an older arcade title that I was not familiar with. And it's similar in idea to like Donkey Kong. You have to get to the top of this mountain where this like the bird of good fortune or good luck or something like that. It looks like Ho-Oh from Pokemon to give you an idea of it. And you have to ascend the mountain by climbing up these ropes that you could fire diagonally. But the ropes have to attach at very specific points. Like you just can't fire it all willy nilly. And you have to ascend very carefully because you have all these like cavemen and dinosaur creatures who are trying to attack you at any given point in time. And they're able to leap up and down, from various levels on the mountain. And, they're also able to mess up your rope. They can undo one end of it and then you just fall to your demise. It's also real easy for you yourself to just fall to your demise if you're not aiming your joystick, in a diagonal position. So that unfortunately, gets pretty tricky, as you go along in this game. And, I got frustrated with it, because like I couldn't make it past the first mountain, because the enemies, like I don't know if I was just putting too much thought into it, but like the enemies have a tendency of swarming in on your location and, you know, just kicking the crap out of you. And so I was just you know, happy leaving it with like, you know, oh, this isn't really for me, you know, leave it with a try it. But my youngest son, who is currently home from school this week, because he had his tonsils out on Monday, like he's been playing video games all week, and he saw the latest Arcade Archives thing. And like, he gets the idea that like all of these games are like old arcade games. And he's just like, what's this? And I'm like, I explained it to him, and I like, he's like, do you like it? And I'm like, not really that big of a fan. Well, how like, what was your high score? And I'm like, I don't even know, buddy. He's like, well, I'm going to play this. And so literally all this morning today, I just heard downstairs, like the games, like, music going like the whole entire time. Like he was playing this game for like 3-4 hours. He's beaten my score. Like I now have an achievement for scoring 5,000 points on this game that I like, I wasn't going to get because I just straight up suck at this game. Meanwhile, my kid's just like, hell yeah, this game's great. So,
so overridden by the kid.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's just like, it's not really my bag. I mean, so, but I mean, I'm always in big support of the arcade or of the Arcade Archives series. But like, if you've got patience and a lot of time going and like, you're looking for that kind of like Donkey Kong esque action, hell yeah, fire up this game. Like this game seriously has my youngest kid's seal of approval. Like I'm no longer allowed to delete this game off the Xbox.
Good. That'll fucking teach you.
Yeah, I know. And now I'm just like, cool. Like what other retro games is he going to like whip my ass at over Christmas break?
All of
them. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll get more Arcade Archives games over the break. And we might have one more to talk about on our next episode. Cause I think we're doing one.
Okay.
I don't know. Cool. Yet. Still up in the air. Can't decide.
But yeah, what does this cost? Like $10?
$10. Give me a verdict.
Yeah, buy it.
Cool.
It's good arcade fun. I suck at it. My youngest kid does not.
Very good. And just goes to show how good games were back in the 80s. They hold up. Games still definitely hold up. So yeah. Next up, Big Adventure Trip to Europe, developed by AV Games, published by Ocean Media, released December 4th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $9.99. This is the biggest trip in Europe where you'll visit 10 countries and 24 cities. You'll see ancient castles, natural objects, beautiful city streets, museums, various architectural objects. That's very specific. You will find many scenes with a fascinating hunt for hidden objects and interesting mini games. Who wants to start on this? I think everyone checked this one out.
I played the shit out of this.
Well, start us off. What's going on in Big Adventure Trip to Europe?
So Big Adventure Trip to Europe is... Honestly, it's a pretty interesting game, in my opinion, compared to a lot of the other hidden object games in here. This game is very elderly coded. And our two main characters are these older folks who are very clearly like the grandparents or like the cool uncle and aunt for these two young kids. And they're going to just like take them all over Europe because, you know, that's something that... you know, is totally doable in today's economy. A lot of the people in the scenes are old people. And I found it to be really interesting because like, it was just like, first off, the game's super informative. Nobody talks like this. Nobody talks like this. It's more of like a guidebook for Europe, but like these people are supposedly having conversations. And again, like no human will talk like this, especially like 8-year-old children who are just like, yes, these paintings are quite fascinating. And it's a good example of Rococo architecture and blah, 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 blah. Like it's like, no. Like I felt like
the Agent symmetrical J and architecture of this.
Yeah. Like I felt like Agent J and Men in Black, like, you know, like when they do the Hogan's Alley scene and like all the army guys are shooting all the aliens. And like, meanwhile, Will Smith puts like the bullet in the in between the eyes is a cardboard cutout of the little girl, you know, and they're just like, why'd you do that? And it's like, look at her textbooks. No 8-year old is reading like quantum physics. you know, and but yeah, so as I was saying, like the game is very elderly coded, which I found to be really interesting because there is no magnifier in this game. So it's aimed at older people, but there's nothing to assist them to play this properly, which becomes really annoying later on because, like many other hidden object games, we have all sorts of like little things that we have to do, whether it's like open this box because, you know, this item is hidden, or hold a, or like take this one item and give it to a person. The game does not really help you figure out where things are supposed to go. And on top of it, it requires you to be so precise with your placement of stuff. Like, let's say you have to hand an umbrella to a person. Well, the game doesn't make it clear who's supposed to actually hold this umbrella. And so you have to move it to each person. And of course, normally in one of these games, you would just hover the umbrella over that, like over that person. No, you have to make it fit into their hand. And so you have to make it very, like, as I said, super precise. It gets damn annoying real quick. And so even though I played a lot of this, I was still just like, God. Now, I will give it this. It does break up the monotony with the little mini games, which, like, a lot of these are just, like, simple, like, a lot of hidden object ones. It's, like, simple puzzles. It does try to switch it up with the, like, kind of puzzles that you have in between. Like, it's not just simple jigsaw puzzles. Like, the, you have to, like, mess with gears. You have to, I mean, there are jigsaw puzzles. But, you know, it just... I did not have a fun experience trying to play this game.
No.
Like, I do appreciate the fact that, like, the hint system does not penalize you that badly. And it is possible to get your 3 stars as long as you click on your raccoon, you pick up all the litter, which I love how it's stressed that all tourists will, like, they tourists love picking up litter. That's something that all tourists do. And it's like, no, but okay. So, like, there's litter on every single map that you have to pick up. Along with like all of the hidden objects that you have to find. And it's just, it gives you a lot to do, but it doesn't make it easy to get it all accomplished.
Yeah. Bree, give me some thoughts on this one.
There were some situations where things will be hidden in or behind things. Sometimes there are sparkling stars that'll give you an idea where the extra spaces are. Other times, not so much. You just have to keep clicking until you find a lighter and a purse to light some candles on a cake. So that was a little frustrating at times. There were issues with unclear directions, like give an umbrella, but yeah, who the fuck like to? Exactly. I just had to drag the umbrella around until I found some spot that might have a place for the one thing.
The one lady's head. Like, yeah, her hand.
Other times I felt like words were ambiguous, like bat could be an animal, a shape, or a baseball bat.
Oh my God, yes. I forgot about that.
I'm surprised you played so much of this, Jacob, because you didn't like it.
I mean, I didn't have as much to review this week, so I got to sing more time into it than normal. Because yeah. Normally,
instead of Dreamlight,
I have not been able to really focus on Dreamlight like I wanted to this week. But once Christmas vacation rolls around and like we're on on hiatus, yeah, like I'm gonna be like really fixing up Wish Blossom Ranch. But
yeah, some other thoughts. The graphics were low resolution in this one, and there was no zoom, which I think Jacob kind of already mentioned. But like that's a detriment. If you want all 3 stars on a level, you have to get the bonus things before you finish the list of items, or you have to replay the level. Good and bad news about that is that the levels are randomized, so you won't have the same things to find the second time around. That's a good and a bad thing. One, that means there's some replayability. The bad is, like, if you don't find all the trash, the raccoon, the silhouetted thing, like before you find all the things on the list, you're screwed. So no random clicking for you. Like most Ocean Media ports, it's from PC. It's a direct cursor port, and there's no changes for console controllers, so you'll have to move a cursor with the left stick to the OK button in order to continue. There's a good amount of puzzles for the price.
Yeah, I will give it that.
Which is $10, so give me your thoughts. What do you two think?
Honestly, there's better hidden object games out there that don't cause as much grief, and I would just rather spend the $10 on those.
Fair.
Yeah, at best I could give this a try. It I was a little annoyed at how hard it was to see the things that were fuzzy and or small, so yeah,
like Joe's stick. I just really want to go back to like the character design for like the two grandparents and the kids. Nobody's faces really seem to match their heads. Like they got like, and yeah, my wife and I like kept referring to like, you know, I mean, it's grandpa and, you know, lesbian grandma. It just, yeah, it just
like grandma's experimenting.
You know, she's going to have fun in Europe this summer. Like, you know, yeah, but like nobody matched like their bodies. It was like we're helping some aliens explore Europe this summer.
Nice. All right, let's move on to Dino Land, developed by Edia, published by Rattalaika Games, released December 12th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, PC for $5.99. Everyone's favorite dinosaur with a gentle heart in the Jurassic area, Dino. One day, indiscriminate slaughter by brutal dinosaurs has begun in a peaceful forest. What a start. Dino sees his lovely girlfriend Michelle and his friends trying to escape and decides to fight for them, curls himself up, transforms into a ball with hyper-strong power and attack the enemy dinosaurs. Dino is taking a step in his epic adventure to bring peace back to the sky, sea, and earth. He transforms into a ball. Bree, we got some retro pinball action. What's going on?
I know. I was going to demand that intro if you forgot somehow. So yeah, this is a retro pinball video game from 1991. It was developed by Wolf Team in Japan for Sega Master Drive and Genesis. It was also on a platform only in Japan called the X68000, which was a Sharp Corporation floppy disk computer that was around from 1987 to 1999. The original title was Retsuden Super Dino Land. I also looked up some of the history of the original developers. They made a dozen other games that I've mostly never heard of, but one you might have, Tales of Fantasia from 1995.
It's
the first game in the Tales series, later released on GBA in North America and Game Boy Advance, yeah, in 2006. So the same people made both those games. Yeah, I know. but now it's available on modern consoles with extras. In the settings, there are things like turbo speed, cheats like infinite balls, level select. There's a jukebox, an art gallery, there's achievements, a copy of the original manual, some rewind, and save and load states.
And turbo.
Speaking of achievements, yes. Speaking of achievements, I got an achievement sitting on the load screen for getting a high score. The game plays a demo, like an attract mode demo, that gets over 100,000 points. And that was all it took for me to get that achievement. It also, there's an achievement for getting to spell out Dino Land. And that also happens in the demo. Yes. So I got the achievement while I was sitting on the screen, taking notes and looking up the history with it playing in the background. There are three difficulty levels in the original game: beginner, spelled wrong, intermediate, and expert. Just spelled wrong in English. Let's see. This also supports two-player turned play. The short version of the story is that you're a little dino named Dino Buns, who can roll into a ball and knock out mighty dinosaurs, which we'll have to do because his girlfriend Michelle needs saving from a gigantic carnivorous dinosaurs.
Yeah, the brutal dinosaurs that began indiscriminate slaughter.
Mm-hmm. The controls for this are a little weird, at least for Xbox. The flipper controls are any direction on the D-pad on the left stick, or the left stick, for the left flipper, and X for the right flipper. So it's a little odd to me.
Yeah.
The trigger triggers function with the new features. So left trigger is rewind, right trigger is turbo. A is for the plunger, which is totally fine. And then to get back to the main user interface shell, you have to hit LB and RB simultaneously, I think.
Yeah.
That's
more
multiple...
like an emulator thing. I know the ACA games tend to do stuff like that.
Yeah, the shell. Right? Yeah. There are multiple play fields or levels that you can get to, like an underwater level. There's some kind of sky level. And then the main level. Our main play field has an upper and a lower part. We can do things like spell out Dino Land. There are bumpers in the upper area, which will help you get some turtle heads. And there's even a slot machine ramp on the upper left. In the water level, there are some sea anemone bumpers and sharks to hit. In the sky level, there's an egg you can crack if you hit it enough times, and like a pterodactyl comes out. The plunger on the main level is being pulled by extra little dinos, little dino buns, which is just super cute. There are enemy dinos that appear moving around on the field for you to hit for points on the main level and the sky level, which was pretty neat. And you have the ability to morph. You do this by pressing B when it's available, and it'll enable you to walk on the field for a short period of time before turning back into a ball. Where it gets really interesting and challenging is getting to a boss zone. I found that even though I was doing fine hitting the boss, either I ran out of time or some other condition I couldn't suss out took me out of that part of the game, which I'll talk about again in a minute here. Some negatives. I'm not sure what is the original coding and what is the new shell, but I had some ball lag. Nothing game-breaking, just noticeable. Speaking of game-breaking, though, you can occasionally get a stopper that will keep you from losing your ball down the center lane. More than once, my ball stopped right on top of it, and I could not nudge the table or anything to get it to move from its perfectly balanced point on the center, where I could not hit it with the flippers, and I couldn't rewind far enough to get it to fall elsewhere. Another time, I managed to get it to bounce perfectly up and down between the ceiling and the bumper on the sea level, and there was, again, no way to stop it. I just let it rack up points until I got all my points achievements and then restarted.
I love it when my balls bounce up and down perfectly on the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah. And then back to the bosses. I did some reading on True Achievements about the boss fights being bugged right now. So I think boss fights are possible, but you have to be using cheats. I'll be honest, I couldn't even figure out what the conditions were to get to the boss fight on the different tables. So
there is a little pit that you got to drop the ball into, and it'll light up five dots. After the fifth one, you hit it again, it'll light up boss, and then you'll like walk up to the boss chamber.
Okay. Yeah, I just, as far as I knew, I got into the boss accidentally. So, yeah. And I couldn't figure out how to get into the boss on the second and third table, so... but yeah, all in all, I had a pretty good time with this one. I'm just hoping they fix whatever's going on with the boss fights. Because that was really frustrating getting in there and not being able to get anywhere with the boss. Like, I finally managed to get there, and then I couldn't, like, no matter what I did, like, it just kicked me out. So, I don't know.
Right. Well, it is a $6 game. Give me your thoughts.
The price is good. I had a fun time with it. I'm hoping that they'll be able to fix the boss fight issue, and I'm going to give it a try.
Very good. All right, let's move on. Let's get into the holiday spirit. We have a two-pack of Santa games.
Yay.
Isn't that exciting?
I wish.
Aww.
That's not very optimistic. Next up, Santa's World, developed and published by Entwickler X, released December 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $7.99. Santa's World is a jump-and-run Christmas game inspired by classic platform games. Goals to find the three lost Christmas gifts and go to the next level while collecting items. traps, obstacles, and enemies make the quest very challenging. Find snowballs and throw them at the enemies to remove them. 3D graphics packed in a nice graphic style, great 2.5D levels, and proven gameplay gives you hours of fun. Jacob, what is Santa's World?
Oh boy, it is really pushing the details of some of that stuff.
What's the game?
So, Santa's World is a 2D platformer where you are Santa and you have to go through all these different levels and collect these three hidden gifts. And if you don't collect these gifts, you can't escape the level. Of course, naturally, there's all sorts of traps. There's enemies that you just have to like jump over. You can't like jump on top of their heads or anything like that. You either have to dodge them by jumping over them, or there are a limited amount of snowballs that you can collect through each level, and hopefully hit them with it. Like the snowballs don't like go on forever, so it is possible to like completely whiff when you're throwing them, and the game doesn't really replace them until you die again. So you're kind of shit out of luck. And naturally, with all platformers, there's all sorts of environmental traps throughout this game. There's going to be spikes to dodge. There's going to be axes that like swing all over the place. Elevators that take you up and down. There's icicles that you can impale yourself on. All sorts of fun stuff. All just so you can collect these three gifts. And then, yes, technically it is kind of 2.5, because once you complete the game, Santa then like at the end area, you can hit the X button and Santa will move on to the next area, and that is done in a 2.5 kind of view where Santa will move on to what is technically the background of it. Visually, this is not a particularly impressive game. If you're looking for a platforming challenge, I guess you can go for that, but I'm not gonna lie, like, I'd rather sit through Outright Games, Grinch, and Elf on the Shelf games than have to go through this one. Like, it's just, you're gonna be dying a lot, it's not particularly fun, and the music loops, like, after, like, 2 minutes, and you're not gonna be hearing anything else. Yeah.
All right, it's $8, what do you think?
Sounds tedious.
It was like, it's just like, it's not, I didn't have fun with it at all. I'm going to say no on this one. I mean, like, if you're really that hard up for like a cheap holiday platforming game, which is an odd, you know, list of things that you want specifically in a video game for this holiday season. There's better ones out there. And believe it or not, Elf on the Shelf has it in spades compared to this.
All right, well, let's try another Santa game with Too Many Santas. Developed by A Rock Studio, published by Penguin Pop Games. This one released December 11th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $6.99. The Santa Claus dating sim you can play all year round. I feel like I don't need to say anymore, should I? Or do you guys just want to take it from here?
I totally want to talk about this game.
Go for it.
All right. So this is a dating sim visual novel where you date Santa, or more so multiple Santas. You have sleepy, sexy, sassy, saintly, sad, and secret Santas to choose from. And before we go any further with that.
Sassy Santa?
Sassy Santa. Sassy. God. Before we go any further with that, I feel like I need to point out that this is by A Rock Studios, the creators of two of my favorite visual novels on Xbox, because they are just silly fun, namely The Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World and Cat President, A More Perfect Union.
Pizza Boy Who Saves the World was, too. Yeah, the Pizza Boy one was one of my favorites that year that it came out. I wasn't as big of a fan of the Cat President one, but but yeah, they do solid work.
Yes.
Well, the expectations are high with this. So.
Yes. So in this, you can name yourself what you want, or you can go with the default of Sandy Cleese, which I thought said cheese at first. And then you choose your pronouns, and then it's off to the dating. Choose your Santa and try to use your choices for the naughty or nice endings of each of your Santa stories. Sandy is running a struggling toy shop in the mall. She makes a wish on a star to not go bankrupt and also find love this Christmas season. And no sooner does she make the wish than she's greeted by six mall Santas, each with different issues. And they're all here to help her save the store and her love life.
Oh my God.
I played through each of the stories, going for different good and bad runs. I think Sassy Santa was my favorite, but they each had their charms.
Honestly, Sassy did have the best conversations, right? In my opinion. Sexy also did had some good ones, and Saintly actually made some interesting points that I was like, okay. But then, like, during runs with other Santas, I was just like, all right, you're kind of a dick.
Yeah. And this game is all about the goofy humor. And if you're paying attention, there's other Santas besides the main six. Like, there's low effort Santa.
Yes.
There's Kitty Claws and possible serial killer Santa. Lord. Even the special thanks in the credits is funny. I'll leave that for you guys to find. There is a setting where you can enable or disable creepy blinking animations, which
tell me more about this option.
So the art style is basically like photos that they've taken and like embellished slightly on what looks like stock footage that's slightly doctored of like a mall toy store, and so they have like blinking that happens on the main characters, but it's kind of creepy because they're all static photos and then there's just this blinking, but you can turn those animations off. I think you should leave them on. It adds the charm.
I left them on. Yeah.
So runs are fairly short. You can either easily enjoy all the Santa fun, whether you choose naughty or nice, like you can get to all of it in a fairly short amount of time and have a good amount of fun with all the different paths. There are save slots, so you can skip the intro and get right to the Santa dating and make different choices without worrying about whether you went too naughty or too nice or whatever. If you've never seen one of their games before, like I said, the art is like still shots of actors in costumes against photo backgrounds.
I think it's most of them are game devs.
Yeah, well, I think some of them are, yeah. I think you're right. The music is all Christmas fare, but not necessarily the same old songs you're used to. I would say most of the music is inspired by Christmas with a balanced mix of actual Christmas songs, and that's great. Obviously, I liked this one, and it's the perfect time for it to release on console. Jacob, what are your thoughts?
If there is one Santa game that you're going to buy this year, it needs to be Too Many Santas.
Yeah.
You want to say more than that?
Oh, well, I mean, Bree covered it like pretty damn well. I mean, it, as she did say, like there are like two paths and it does like make like a little noise when you've made the correct decision for like the nice for the nice list. And so like there is one where you like each Santa has a thing like one path, like where you'll end up with the Santa and one where you won't end up with the Santa. And yeah, like it's just. It's a really funny storyline throughout, and it's definitely worth all the replayability that you can do in this game. This was a lot of fun, and I'm glad that we got Too Many Santas.
All right, well, it is $7.69. I have a feeling I know what you're both going to say on this one, but I'll ask anyway. Give me your verdicts.
So easy buy it for me. Even if you don't think you'd like visual novel, give the O-Rock games a try. You might be surprised. This actually ended up on my Xbox top 23 indies for the year. So me likey.
Very good.
Absolutely. Get this one. And if like I think both of the Santa games that we reviewed, or that we, this, and when I say we, I mean the podcast, I think they both cost the same amount of money. This is the one you want to buy.
The other one's a buck more.
Well, all the more reason to buy Santa's World. Cheaper and better.
No, the Too Many Santas is the cheaper one.
Santa's World, I know. That's what I just said. It's you cheaper said Santa's and better. World.
Oh.
No, I didn't.
You said did. Santa's World.
Whatever. You know what? Fuck everyone. Buy Santa's World. Or no. Damn it. Now you fucked me up. Buy Too Many Santas. I hate everyone.
Next game, Hidden Cats in Istanbul, developed by Nuke Arts, published by Silesia Games. Released December 17th on Xbox, 18th on PlayStation, January 8th, it'll hit the Switch. $3.99 per console platform. I don't know. It's not a stack. Play anywhere. So yeah. Let the ever wandering Hidden Cats crew be your guide through colorful Istanbul. Explore the city's iconic landmarks like the Blue Mosque, the Grand Bazaar, and more while relaxing to soothing Turkish-inspired music. Discover over 900 hidden objects, unlock special cats, and as always, enjoy cozy, no-stress gameplay in a city full of color, history, and charm. Bree, did you find the kitties in Istanbul?
I did. So this is the final Hidden Cat game of the year. It is my second favorite theme to come out after Halloween-related content. It is set in Istanbul. I don't normally hype up the music for a Hidden Cat game, but the menu alone has such a good tune to set the theme. So good music on this one. Really good. If you've never heard about the Hidden Cat games, you must be new here. It's a hand-drawn background filled with interesting things in the city of Istanbul. There are hidden cats for you to find everywhere. The initial scene, you have over 200 things to find between cats, city people, and special cats and locations that unlock cards, and more importantly, bonus levels. As you find the cats in a section, the picture colors in, and making it easier to narrow down where other cats may be hiding until you color in the whole scene, and then you get celebratory fireworks. But wait, there's more.
Yay.
The game has 6 bonus levels, like a hookah cafe, a bathhouse, the Grand Bazaar, and a Blue Mosque. The bonus levels are smaller scenes with around 50 to 100 things to find. You'll have extra hidden cats that are hidden behind things that wiggle to let you know they're there. And then to help you find cats, there are meows when you're near. And you get meows when you find the cats, too. Lots of meowing, basically. And a lot of the special cats you'll find in the game are actual cats from fans from Turkey. Kind of like Joe's cats have been in 2 games now. They took all the cats that are in it are fan cats from Turkey. So you can see their little flag on there. And finally, after you finish the bonus levels, you unlock the Balat Festival, which is a huge scene where you have to find a lot of cats and a ton of city people, but you can only find the city people by their pictures, which are given to you 5 at a time.
Those.
But this one's a little easier because there's only like 50 to find. It's not like 200 things to find. It's like 150 things total to find. So it's a little bit better balanced. I love this series. Like I said, this is my second favorite of the year from Nuke Arts. The art is great. There's so many fun things going on in the background of Istanbul. There's like an ice cream shop, ice cream sellers with whirling dervishes, coffee shops, palaces to find. It's good fun. Lots of meowing.
That's $4.
And the price is great.
All the Silesia's prices are pretty great.
Absolutely.
They put out a lot of affordable stuff, and it's good stuff, too. Like, the Hidden Cat series is probably one of the best series on Xbox.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to Keiki's Twisted Bakery, developed by Tiny Minds, published by Ultimate Games. Released December 11th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $9.99. Keiki's Twisted Bakery is a stealth survival horror where you must bake to survive. Trapped inside a deranged bakery crawling with sweet tooth mascot monsters, you play as a lost child searching for your brother, sneak through candy-colored corridors, gather bizarre ingredients, and craft color-coded pies that can stun and destroy your enemies, hide under tables, time your moves, and uncover the dark secret behind the bakery's grinning faces. One recipe at a time, fight your way out before you become the next dessert. Bree and Aki, both of you played this. Aki, do you want to start this one off?
Sure. I think I'm good now. So in this, you play as a kid and you burst your way out of a wooden crate, basically. And you're like, okay, time to look around. And you see this fucking weird machine that bakes pies and is like, we need ingredients. And then you find boxes full of just infinite amounts of ingredients. The ingredients are chocolate, peanut butter, aged sugar, brittle bones, meat chunks, and something else I don't remember off the top of my head. I apologize. And you have to obtain 100 of each of these for an achievement. Have fun. You can pick them up one at a time. Yay. You start off with access to like 3-ish rooms of the building that you can walk around and grab ingredients from. And the machine can just hold an infinite amount of them. The counter only goes up to 99, but you can still keep placing stuff in there. And it does keep track of actually how many are in there instead of just leaving it at 99. Yay. And yeah, then you enter one of the named rooms. And once that happens, one of the cakey monster thingies shows up. And it's a little asshole, but all you do is you go into these rooms, find the other last couple of ingredients you need, and start carting them back to the area while avoiding being seen by this monster. Once you have enough resources, you're able to bake a pie. You can make 4 different pies. An achievement is for making each one of them, 50 of each one of them, so you're going to be collecting shit for a long, long time. Have fun. And you pick up the pie, and occasionally an enemy will come out, or the enemy will come out, and their health bar is in a color, but that color will change occasionally. And you have to pick up the pie that's of the same color in order to damage them. Damaging them also stuns them, but I think any pie will stun them. Just yeah. The only one that will hurt them is throwing them one of the same color. After you beat them, they drop a key. You use that key to open a new area, which immediately spawns a new enemy, and you repeat this process. And you do that over and over until you beat the game. So basically what this game amounts to is running from point A 30 feet to point B, grab an item, run the fuck back, put it in the machine, repeat about 100 times.
Didn't sound like you enjoyed this one.
No, because that's literally all the game is. You just grab stuff, put it in the machine, and keep doing that until you can bake a pie. And because the creature walks out with random colors, because it's not like, oh, you see them once, they're that color, so they're going to stay that color. No, it's randomized every time you see it, what color it is. So you have to bake a bunch of each pie. And if you miss, now you got to go make a pie of that color again, so you have that colored pie again. And the thing is, it doesn't stay on the screen for too long. Like, it'll walk around for maybe 10, 15 seconds, and then it exits a portal, and next time it comes in, the color of its health bar is randomized again. So you're going to be... So you need to make a bunch of each of these, because it takes 5 pie hits to kill the creatures. So you basically need to make 5 of each one and just nail it whenever you can.
I actually found it takes anywhere from 3 to 10 hits, depending on whether you hit them in the head or not. So like headshots, if you get all headshots, you could possibly kill them with as little as three or less or more. I mean, depend if you don't hit them in the head. So
that would have been great information to have. Well, smack them in the back of their bitch head.
Some of my complaints with the game is that there really wasn't a lot of exposition or tutorial to this game. There really was nothing at all.
Yeah, they don't tell you how to throw the pie at all, or that's what you have to do. You have to. There is a tutorial, but it's a little shitty video, and it doesn't tell you any buttons to push.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, I died before figuring out what button was to crouch and hide. And finally, you know, that I could walk through swing doors and explore the place more. Like, it took me a while to figure that out. And then, you know, the frosting doors that Keiki can teleport through to other areas are, like, placed in such a way that if you are caught there accidentally at the wrong moment, you're just going to die because there's no place to hide near them.
Yay.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of hiding spots.
Sounds like we've had a rough episode, kind of.
There's a couple other things that I would mention is that the game only saves on a timer every few minutes. It'll give you a countdown on the bottom left. Yeah.
And you can't be near an enemy. Because if you're in a danger area, it also won't save until you get into a hiding spot or something.
Yeah.
Don't know how many times that's fucked me over. Yeah, but it's a lot.
There are at least two endings involving whether or not you save your brother.
I'll let that little shit die. Who cares?
Just get the game I will over say with one faster. Cool thing I thought was nice is that you are lower down in your perspective because you're playing a child. So like countertops are a little taller than you might think normally in a game because you're a kid. They did that perspective well, and then that also makes the mascot horror more tall and, you know, looming and scary because they're that much bigger because you are kid sized.
Also, there is pie drop. Be prepared for that. You need to be closer. Oh, you ain't ever gonna hit that little bastard.
Yeah.
Man. All right, $10 on this one. If people are on the fence, Ultimate Games was nice enough to hook us up with a couple of giveaway codes. We gave away one earlier to Mr. Coolness. Should we give away another one right now?
Sure.
Let's see who's gonna win a free copy of Keiki's Twisted Bakery. Congrats to BX Latino Heat. Woo! Just won himself a copy of Keiki's Twisted Bakery. For the people who didn't win, we got one more copy to give away during the music later. But if you didn't win it, it's $10. Is it worth picking up or should people try winning?
Free, you go ahead. You're nicer than I am.
I found this to be more frustrating than fun because of the lack of tutorial. I haven't played a ton of mascot games, but I feel like I've had more fun in others. I also hate to reduce this to just another mascot game because it had a fun angle with the baking aspect. But part of how I learned to play the game was reading guides on Steam. The game works great. I just felt like it needed more instruction on what to do, even just a button prompt screen in the opening room. I had an okay time figuring all this out, and maybe I'll give it like later another go. But right now, this game was just not for me. Gotcha. I see the merits of the game and the pricing is good for what it is. I can give it a try.
All right, let's wrap things up with Security Booth Director's Cut.
What about me?
Oh, I thought you answered already. Oh, that's right. Bree's the nice one. All right, mean one, you say what you want.
Oh, hell no. While the game plays fine, there's no problems with the actual gameplay. It runs perfectly fine. This game is boring as shit. Because literally all you're doing is running, grabbing an ingredient, running back, and it takes like 4 to 5 ingredients to make any of the pies. Have fun just running 30 feet and running 30 feet back. That's all you're doing. Woohoo! Not fun. No.
It sounds like you do more than just that. Like die.
Not really. Yes, I did die a lot because once the creature sees you, you're really not fast enough to get away. So many times I was so close to being able to duck under something and nope.
Haha, suck it. One last game tonight. Security Booth Director's Cut, developed by Kyle Horwood, published by Cloud Colony Games. Released December 5th, Series X and S for $6.99. Your job is simple. You must make sure that only the right authorized personnel are getting into the facility. To do this, when a car arrives at the gates, it's your job to go and talk with the driver and check their license plate. Make sure that the person is on the employee register by finding the license plate on the register. If the person is not on the register, you must tell them to leave. Make sure to only open the gates to employees and keep the gate closed at all times. Jacob, how was your job doing a security booth?
I mean, I did my job correctly. I'll give myself that. So in security booth, it is like very PS1-ish kind of graphics. And it's a first person. I don't even know. I wouldn't call it like a survival horror. It's a survival creepiness. But you play this new security guard who has to stand in this booth overnight. And there are all these cars that are going to come in, and you have to talk to the person in there, check their license plate, then go back into the booth, and you have a list of all of the license plates that are allowed in, like license plates and names that are allowed in, and they have to match. And if they don't match, you turn them away. And the game is a lot of just sitting there waiting for the next car to come in. When they do, check it. And it's really more creepy than anything. And the game does expand beyond the security booth, but I can't really talk about that without spoiling a lot of the story for this game. Because this isn't just like a weird, like creepypasta papers, please. There's a weird storyline that's going on with it, like that isn't fully explained anyway. So you might be feel a little bit let down with that, but the game does do its atmospheric creepiness pretty damn well. Like a lot of it's listening to the outside, listening to the hum of the electric lights inside your security booth, and just honestly dread because it's just like, you know, that this is going to be a horror game or supposed to be a horror game. And you're just waiting and waiting for like the inevitable, like thing that's going to fuck things up. As I said, like I can't really go into the storyline too deeply, but there are multiple endings to the game. And so there is a lot of replayability to this. Like I would say like a run takes like about like 20 to 30 minutes. And so like, you're going to be like, if you want to get the full entire story, you're going to have to, like 3 or 4 hours, I would say, but for the atmosphere, like if anything, I would say it's more for the atmosphere than the story that you're going for in this one. But, I enjoyed that. The thing I didn't enjoy with this is that like the system for looking up everyone's license plates and stuff like that felt very tedious. And I was like, I wish that there was a way to change that. But otherwise, like I thought it was a fun little game.
All right. I heard you say PS1 style graphics, and I'm looking at the store page. I'm like, it doesn't look that bad. And then I clicked on one of the images. I'm like, yeah, that's PS1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thumbnails look a little bit better full size. But yeah, if you like the PS1 aesthetic, this fits it. It's $7. What do you think?
I'd give it a buy it. Like I think it's sufficiently creepy and like worth your time.
Alrighty. And with that, we're done. Big thanks to the Pixile Games crew for coming on, hanging out with us and chatting about Super Animal Royale. Big thanks to Lloyd for coming on, hanging out and chatting about Godbreakers with us and some news. Thanks to Aki for hanging in there, even though she was not doing well tonight. You're a trooper, Aki. Big thanks to Jacob for being 10 minutes late and we didn't start the show because I gave the Pixile guys the wrong Discord.
It's
been a day. And with that, we will have one more episode because I don't want to put the rest of the reviews on this 3-hour show.
Fair.
Yeah.
We will be back with one more show before we wrap up for the year, so we will catch you next time. Does anyone have any final words to wrap it up until, like, 3 days?
Bucky Wucky Choo Choo Train.
Bucky Choo Choo Train.
Yep. All right.
She's sick the whole show, and at the end we get Fucky Wucky Choo Choo Train.
Yeah.
That's fair.